This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Burnt Toast Makes You Sing Good is the beguiling title of the latest book from writer Kathleen Flynn. It's billed as a memoir of food and love from an American Midwest family. That Midwest she writes about is largely the family farm near Flint in Davison. Now, the Flynns and good food seem to go together. Where you find one, you'd find the other. You get a wonderful, loving story of a Michigan family, and you get recipes, lots of great recipes, just what one would expect from the author of The Sharper Your Knife, The Less You Cry, and The Kitchen Counter Cooking School. Kathleen Flynn, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, in your first book, The Sharper Your Knife, The Less You Cry, you tell us the story of going through Le Cordon Bleu in Paris. And it seems that Burnt Toast is kind of like the prequel. We meet your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents, and we find out why cooking is literally in your blood.
That's a great way to describe it, actually. I hadn't thought about it until recently that it's sort of a prequel. But I think that's true. I really went back. I started thinking about doing this book when I was actually writing The Sharper Your Knife, because I was surprised how often I would come back to these stories in the farm. I mean, even in Sharper, I have my mother talking about her minestrone soup and the chickens and all kinds of stuff. And in my second book, I did too. And I thought, you know, I really want to kind of dig in there and find out more about my background and more about all these cooks I keep hearing about. And it was surprising. I found that in every generation, people cooked for a living in my family, going way all the way back to my great-great-grandmother, who arrived from Sweden in 1890 with a single suitcase at the age of 17. I also found some other surprising things, such as the fact that one of my grandfathers is a bootlegger and that my last name shouldn't really be Flynn. So when you go digging around for those recipes, people, just remember you might find more than you bargained for.
Now, you're the youngest of five kids. And so much of what the story you tell happened long before you arrived. And I'm wondering how much digging and research it took to really get all those great details of your family's history.
You know, it's really interesting. I had asked my mother over the years, because I started thinking about this book 5 years ago, and I would say, oh, you know, what about this, Mom? What about that? And then one day I asked her about my dad's chicken and biscuits recipe, and I said, do you have that anywhere? And she said, you know, I think I might have written about that. And so she went to one of her many closets in her house and pulled down this box, and I had never seen the box before, and it was filled with all these stories that she had written over the course of about 30 years about their life on the farm, about memories of her grandmother, about stories my father told her about his childhood during the Great Depression. And I just said, Mom, I can't believe that you've never shared these with me. I mean, for one, I'm a memoir writer, for crying out loud, you know, this stuff is really useful. And she said, oh, well, you know, I'm not a real writer. I didn't want to show it to you. I didn't think it was any good. And I went through, and for a project like this, it was a treasure trove. You know what I mean? It was extraordinary detail stuff. A lot of times she'd written it around the time that it had happened. So when people ask me exactly that question, like, how did you have so much detail about stuff that happened before you were born? Well, that was why. I mean, and a lot of those stories make up the core of the book. And then I did additional interviewing with her and also other members of the family, including my father's only surviving sibling, which was his much younger sister, and she had a lot of details that she filled in as well.
Kathleen, what led you to see your family's story as something special enough that you really wanted to write this book and share it with everyone, and also to serve up all those recipes and really tie your family's story and all the love everyone had for everybody with food?
You know, it's what's interesting about it is I don't know how remarkable my family really is. I think that they're remarkable in the way that a lot of, if not most, American families are. I mean, they start with this immigrant story. I mean, people who were willing to make extraordinary sacrifices and to give up everything to try to find not often even a better life for themselves, but for the people who came after them. I mean, I look at my grandmother, my great-great-grandmother, who came over from Sweden, and she came over, worked as a housemaid, and then as a cook when she found out they made a little bit more money. And she worked really hard and saved all of her money so that her two brothers could come over. And then the three of them worked really hard and saved all of their money so that the rest of their seven siblings and their parents could move to America. And I kind of look at that and I think, you know, everyone has that story somewhere in their past. And so even though I like to think my family is this kind of quirky, plucky lot, you know, who worked really hard and had these really wonderful values. And my grandparents in particular, they kind of cultivated this really strong culture of generosity. And I think that was also a message I wanted to share. I think that that was something that was a much more common element in kind of our general communities and so on, just even a generation or two ago. And I really wanted to resurface that to show what a wonderful life you can have by, you know, giving a lot of things away and being very generous. So while it's, I think, a nice story about my family, and I'm happy that I did that, I'm happy I did it for them, but I really also wanted other people to look at my story and say, wow, that really reminds me of mine, you know, and to find their own, kind of think more about their own roots and the people that went before them, and really think about why maybe they have a certain dish on a particular holiday, or why they always have, say, fish on Friday, or, you know, that great casserole recipe that their great aunt passed down. Maybe think more about where all of that came from, because we really learn a lot about ourselves and where we come from the food we eat.
And speaking of learning about where we come from, one of my very favorite stories in your book came right off the bat as you tell us how your parents, Milt and Irene, met. He was at Michigan State University after he'd served in Korea, and she was a secretary. And one night, they both wound up at a roller rink near Lansing, and your dad knocked your mom down, and he took a look at her and asked her out. Would you read us the excerpt from Burnt Toast? Tell us what happened next.
Mom couldn't believe her luck that such a smart, handsome college guy wanted to date her. As she confided the story to a coworker her age attending his college, the woman just shook her head and put her hand up to silence her. "Listen, I wouldn't get my hopes up," she said flatly to my mom as she fixed the circle pin on her shirt. "Don't you know that he's dating the water carnival queen? They're the big item around campus. I heard they're getting engaged." The queen was a leggy, glamorous blonde. Her beauty was legend around Lansing. Mom decided to check out her competition. She learned the beauty queen frequented a certain hair salon on Saturday mornings. With the deft nonchalance of a detective, she feigned waiting for a bus across the street until the blonde turned up. Mom watched her walk with the practiced poise of someone comfortable with being on display. Her dimpled smile showed off perfect, brilliant white teeth that matched her perfect, delicate gloves. Mom felt beaten. She got on the next bus that arrived, even though she had no idea where it was going. As she took a seat, she gulped back tears. "How could I be so stupid?" she thought on the bus as it pulled away, leaving the blonde in the distance. "She's like a movie star. I don't stand a chance." After a few dates, Dad pulled into the drive-in movie theater. They brought along their own popcorn. He asked Mom to hold the paper bag, and when he took it back, it spilled all over them. "Irene, I've got something to say," he started nervously. "Here it comes," Mom thought. "He's going to dump me." "I've been trying to figure out a way to ask you to..." He paused and took a deep breath. "Will you marry me?" he blurted. "But what about the water carnival queen?" Mom asked, incredulous. "Are you kidding me?" he responded, dumbfounded. He took her hands gently in his. "You're the brightest, most beautiful woman that I've ever met. I knew you were the one for me the minute that I picked you up off that rink."
Just wonderful. That's writer Kathleen Flynn reading from her memoir, Burnt Toast Makes You Sing Good, a memoir of food and love for an American Midwest family. Kathleen, what does the title mean, Burnt Toast Makes You Sing Good?
That refers to my grandmother, who would actually... didn't believe in any kind of newfangled fad, such as, say, toasters would be some anything like that. I mean, she was kind of a hand-whipping kind of lady. And so she would take her toast and she would put it into the racks in the oven and just kind of put it under the broiler. Because, you know, she felt like, hey, I make my own bread. I can certainly toast it. Like, how hard can that be? But, of course, she'd always get distracted. And then she would end up burning a bunch of it. And she'd give it out to small kids. Because she wouldn't waste food either. I mean, they lived on a farm. And, you know, food was really valuable. And so she would make up stuff. And among her most famous ones was, oh, eat the burnt toast. That makes you sing good. I mean, everybody knows that. And maybe there's something to it. I mean, all my family can sing. Like, we all have sort of decent singing voice. I mean, we're not the Von Trapps or anything, you know, but we certainly can, you know, all carry a tune, and we all like to sing, and maybe that had something to do with it.
Every chapter, you end with a selection of recipes tied in. So we have everything from Grandma Inez's pancakes to the spaghetti sauce your dad made at his restaurant in San Francisco. And our producer, Ellie Billings, made your mom's recipe for Candy Girl Moist Oatmeal cookies. So I have to tell you, I'm going to try it now. It's here, and boy, they are moist. So as I try one of these cookies, tell us your memory of them.
Oh, it's sort of an embarrassing one, really.
Go for it. Ooh, it's good. Mm.
Oh, good.
Moist.
Mm-mm. Yes. So we moved away from the farm when I was about 7 years old, and we moved into, and I put air quotes around it, town, because it was about 1,200 people who lived in this little town, and we moved into this house, and it seemed really fancy, and although I was back there recently, and I decided it's not very fancy at all, but I walked around the neighborhood. I thought, oh, my mom had said something about, you know, going and calling on the neighbors, and so I decided that I would go and meet the neighbors one night when they were out. And I dressed in my best cowgirl outfit, which is disturbing because I actually had more than one. And
so
mashing hat,
by the way.
Did you?
I
awesome.
Did.
Right?
Yep.
We used to go to the thrift store all the time and see when there were always cowgirl outfits. So I had all these cowgirl outfits. And I got a basket and I went into my mom's cookie jar and I put all these cookies in the jar, and I walked around to the different houses and introduced myself and gave people cookies, which now I just think, what a freak. I don't know what came over me that seemed like such a good idea. But one of the women across the street, and completely randomly, she came to one of my book events in Davison when I was back there. And she said, I remember that because it was such a weird thing that you did that. But I did it apparently for about a week where I went around and met all these people.
The ambassador of goodwill from the Flynn family.
Yeah, but it's funny. So the very first time I did that, though, I these were the cookies.
I have to tell you, they are so moist and so yummy. And I know you say in your recipe to actually kind of cook the raisins a little before you put them in. And Ellie did that. And they're like plump and delicious.
Yeah, it really makes a big difference. I've also done it with craisins, and that's really a nice kind of substitute as well. So
I have to tell you, full disclosure here, Kathleen, I read your book. I always take reading with me, and I was on a mini vacation in Siesta Key, Florida, not even knowing your story was going to wind up on Anna Maria Island. I gobbled up your book in a couple of days. I loved everyone in your family. Your dad and my dad share the same name, so I guess there was that for it because I could kind of project. But we were looking to take a drive on the Sunday before we came home, and I said to my husband, I want to go through Cortez and take me on to Anna Maria Island. And I think about the fact that your dad had to be dragged kicking and screaming to Florida for vacation because he thought vacation meant hunting up in northern Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think?
Well, I loved Anna Maria Island. Oh, it was wonderful. Just, I've got a picture that I put up of just smiling in the sunshine on the beach. And I thought about how many Michigan families did exactly what your mom and dad did. They find their slice of retirement heaven in Florida, but still have those Michigan roots.
Yeah, I think that it's funny whenever we walk the beach at night, and my mom do it almost every night that I'm in Florida, and I spend a few months there every year now because I bought a house there years ago, and we always talk about how the island is my dad's legacy to us, that we were so lucky, you know, to be able to, I think about this a lot, that I was very lucky to have grown up in Michigan and experienced that life. And it's a good life. Like, I went back to Davison and did a couple of events for my book. And there were all these people, like my cousins and their friends. And I looked around and I talked to all of them and wondered, what would my life be like if I had stayed in Davison instead of moving to Florida? And I thought, you know, it probably would have been great. I mean, it's a good life, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It would have been my parents' life in many ways. I mean, going fishing and going hunting and all of that. And in fact, I think this whole book and going back home and made me really want to spend more time in Michigan. And I took my husband there and he loved it. But by going to Florida, I think that those few years I spent there before I turned 18, and then, you know, kind of spending a lot of my adult life around Florida, it made me realize there was a big world out there. I think having that sort of dual hometown, in a way, you know, being exposed to very different sort of lives and, you know, different kind of lifestyles made me really, I think, long to see more of the world. And maybe that explains why I ended up in Paris eventually.
Yeah.
Would I have still gone to Paris if I stayed in Michigan? I don't know, really. I'll never know.
No.
But I'm lucky that I have a beach to walk on, and my mom still lives there, and that we have that to share. But then during the summer, you know, I plan to spend a lot more time in Michigan.
What do you love about writing?
That's a great question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. I don't know that I've ever thought about it, because I always wrote from the time I basically learned how to read. And before I learned how to read and write, I used to tell stories. And my mom said I would be this tiny little, like, 3 or 4 year old and coming up with these crazy. My mom would be like, where did you come up with that? I don't know. I guess what I like about writing to me is that they say that writers live twice. And, you know, that's certainly true if you write memoirs. And I feel that in a lot of ways, by writing about, say, growing up on the farm or going to Paris or even the experience of teaching other people to cook, like I did in my second book, it's really made me think more about the life that I'm living and reflect on it in a way that I think we often don't pause and take the time to do. And I like to share stories about other people, because I often think I'm not really sure how interesting I am. I think that other people are always really interesting. And I just think everyone has a story and you can learn something from everyone.
Well, we certainly learn about your family. And I have to say, I was laughing. I wiped away some tears. And I cannot wait to try more of these recipes. And I want to thank Allie Billings, our producer, for making your delicious cookies, because they really are terrific. And we want to let everybody know we have put the recipe for the Candy Girl Moist Oatmeal Cookies up on our website. Kathleen Flynn's book is Burnt Toast Makes You Sing Good, a memoir of food and love for an American Midwest family. Kathleen, it was really, really a great read, and it was great to talk with you.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time chatting with you.